Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance.
We are back, Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5, back by popular demand, all the way from New Brunswick, Canada, by way of Peoria.
Nova Scotia.
But no,
it's right beside New Brunswick.
All right. I get there's seven, right? Seven provinces in Canada?
Jason, there's 10 provinces.
Oh, well.
Now, we'll go through the list later. But
I could probably get to seven of them. There's seven sacraments.
Seven sacraments, yeah. You're more on the Catholic Canada kind of idea.
Yeah, so if Catholic was a perfect country, it would have seven. Because that's the number of perfection, right?
Well, and then, yeah, I guess so. But then there's 12 apostles. So, and we do have 10 provinces.
Well, that was to represent the 12 tribes of Israel, which wasn't perfect.
It wasn't perfect, but it was human and God sanctified it. And there's 10 provinces and two territories in Canada. So it actually does have 12.
Oh.
Whereas the U.S. has 50. What's that?
Plus some territories.
And
I don't know how many. Two for sure I can think of. Puerto Rico and Guam. Those are probably the only two.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's the U.S. Virgin Islands represented as? Is that a...
A protectorate or a territory or something in there. God bless them.
Sir Paul Moore.
Thank you.
Yes, with us.
I wish.
Absolutely. So thank you for coming back. We're going to have a... Well, we were going to have a conversation today on Father's Day, but John informed me that it was canceled due to coronavirus. So,
yeah, I think John's rumor might be, I'm not quite sure.
A little farcical?
A little. I think John might have been kidding a little bit there. But don't mention that to anybody. It might actually, you never know.
It wouldn't surprise me if we don't have to end up canceling Father's Day at some point because it's like a sign of the patriarchy. You know?
Yeah.
That we'll have to amend it to something else. So, yeah, I didn't even realize that Father's Day was this weekend.
Yeah.
I was told that I got my Father's Day present like 3 months ago. So,
oh.
We were at Lowe's and they had the like 10 pack of DeWalt tools on sale.
Yeah.
And so I got it. And as we were walking out, I was informed that like that was my Father's Day present, which is fine. It's been fantastic. We'll have to call DeWalt and see if we can get some ad money for this spot. But
sounds good, yeah.
It's been fantastic. I did have to buy some more batteries.
Yeah.
It came with two 2-amp batteries, and for the saws, that's just not quite enough.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that we got chickens over the past...
No.
Corona teen. We got 8 baby chicks on April 1st, so then I had to build what I refer to as the Chicks Mahal, because it is...
Taj Mahal
of chicken coops.
Chicken coops?
Yeah,
wow.
It is nice. I found there was a great guy out west of town that was on Facebook. He had, for $100, he had old steel tin off of a barn that he had taken down. So it was already patinaed and had been painted years and years ago. So that was all chipping off.
Yeah.
And some of my eggs will probably have like lead poisoning, but... But that'll be fine. So it's all, you know, I sided the whole thing.
Wow.
It's got a roof on it. And, I mean, I could probably go into business making chicken coops. It's right up there with some of the best I saw on YouTube. So
good for you.
So that's what I needed the DeWalt tools for,
right,
to come full circle. And the drill and everything is no big deal. But so I got a 2-pack of the 5-amp-hour batteries, and man, those things are nice. And they have an 8-amp-hour battery, and I was looking at them, and my wife was like, well, just get the 8s. And I'm like, well, part of having a cordless tool is that it doesn't weigh 1,000 pounds. And
right.
So to get, you know, the 5 and the 2 is a big difference. I mean, it's double the size. And so I can only imagine the 8 would be that much more, you know, bulky. So, you know, there's that fine line.
Yeah.
But it came with an extra charging pack, so now I got 4 batteries, 2 charging packs. So I'm good with that.
Wow.
Came with the radio. The radio charges my cell phone. It's got a USB port on it. It's Bluetooth. I mean, it's...
You should be good for next Father's Day with that present. I mean...
Let's not... Well, that's if Father's Day's still around by next year. It's been a tumultuous last few weeks in our country, so we'll... Hopefully we get everything... Hopefully everybody settles down and goes back to work.
Yeah.
To church.
Please God, yeah.
We had church this week for the first time. Have you been back yet?
I have been back, yes.
How'd it go?
fine. And my wife and I were actually a little distanced from the congregation because we were. She does the music, and we were filling in for somebody. She does the piano, and I was leading the songs, so we were naturally distanced. I didn't have to wear. I'm wearing a mask right now in the studio here because I am sensitive to picking up things. But in the church there, nobody was within 30 or 40 feet of me, so I didn't even have to. It's kind of hard to sing and wear a mask.
Yeah.
So so we were back to church. It was great.
So yeah. I didn't read. We had gotten like a whole direction list from the church, and so I didn't read it until like late in the day. So we had to go online and reserve seats. So by the time I realized that, told my wife, she got on to reserve seats. There was only one pew left.
Wow.
And it was at the front.
Ah.
And we are back pew Catholics with our the five demons that we take to church with us. We sit in the back. And not only was it in the front, but they were also on the live stream. So like where the camera was positioned, you could see the five Bramley demons.
Wow.
But apparently, so I ended up not being able to go. So my wife had to take them by herself. So, but she said they were great. I watched parts of the live stream just so I could see them. And they were all dressed up, wow. Which, for the last 4 months, just getting dressed up can be a feat.
Well,
so
yeah.
They were dressed up. They were pretty well behaved. The baby who's three apparently kept his mask on the whole time, which shocks me.
Wow. The baby had a mask on?
Yeah. If you're over two, you got to wear a mask.
Oh, the baby's, 3 years, not yes. two, three,
yeah, yeah,
not 3 months.
Yeah. 3 years old. So he wore his mask the whole time, but apparently they were good, and everybody liked it. So we got right on yesterday morning to get our back row pew reserved for this coming Sunday. So yeah. We usually go Sunday, and we ended up getting Saturday. Like I said, Sunday was full, and I had already scheduled to get a hog from a farmer down in Elkhart, and me and a couple buddies slaughtered a hog on Saturday. So...
Wow.
For the first time, it went fantastic. We're definitely doing it again.
Gee, you're moving into the agricultural arena here.
Yeah, I'm gonna start a homestead. I watch these guys on YouTube, and I never think about it like before I do something. I always think about it after, like with the Chicks Mahal. Like I should have videotaped me building that and put it on YouTube. I'm telling you, people would have watched it. If for nothing else than the sheer fact that it was always like on the edge of complete disaster, but I pulled it out. Same with the hog. It went good, but we should have filmed it,
I don't know about the hog. It might've been a little, a little challenging to watch.
Yeah.
The whole thing. I mean,
it was good. It went well though.
Well,
but yeah. we got lucky that it was only 70 degrees on Saturday. So we won't be doing one during the summer. It was it was warm.
Yeah.
It was hard to get it cooled down and stuff. So
we'll
wait for the fall, but we're definitely going to do it again. It went really well. So if you're out there thinking about like, I think I could pull this off, do it.
So Jason, what are the ages of your kids are from three and how old's your oldest?
14. So the girls are 14 and nine. Well, 10 next week, 14 and 10 next week. And then the boys currently are 6, 5, and 3. Riker will be 7 next week. Well, in 2 weeks, I guess. So.
Okay.
So we got a busy next couple of weeks with birthdays.
Wow.
So we'll I think we're having pool parties.
Oh. Wow. How are you going to do pool parties with the social distancing and all that stuff?
Well, I don't know. They'll just have to have separate rafts, I guess. I think we're over the social distancing.
You're over it?
Well, we've been quarantined with the same 3 or 4 families in our neighborhood since the beginning. So those will be the only people that come over. But so like the first 2 weeks, so I told you my wife only works one day a week. So the first 2 weeks, the moms of those families still had to go to work because the schools closed, but the jobs hadn't kind of shut down yet.
Right.
And so my wife said, well, just send the kids over, they can come here. And so, because they didn't have daycare for, for that setup, they thought the kids were going to go to school. So the kids had been at our house since day one. So then even when the jobs kind of closed down, it was like, all right, well, your kids have been coming over here for the last 2 weeks. So we have quarantined pretty much from everybody else. But the 4 families that are on our block that the kids have been together the whole time. So we're like, well, it's,
So you
at this point, we feel safe about it.
Yeah, you mentioned there about the mums were at work. It kind of leads us into a little bit of our, our
yeah doctor. Discussion on Father's Day.
Yeah, because you that's some obviously when I was young that was I'm 60 nearly 64 now. So
the beauty of I don't spoil this for you. The beauty of radio is you could tell people you were 48 if you want. So
yeah,
I mean, feel free.
Well, yes. Well, let's just say for the purposes of this discussion, I'm nearly 64.
Okay, all right.
Because back in when I grew up, the roles were a little bit more. They were still just in transitioning a little bit, but women didn't work quite as much outside the home.
Yeah.
Starting now today, obviously, I don't know. Maybe it's equal. But you mentioned those moms quote in the neighborhood, and you mentioned yourself that right now was a bit of a slow time at work, and you still have stuff going on, but not as busy as it often is, and that your wife was actually busier.
Yeah. So it's been interesting, somewhat. For us personally, a role reversal. Now, to your point, I think for our society at large, aside from probably fairly orthodox Christian families, I mean, I'd say it's you're probably 90%+ both parent households working, which is interesting. I think what we've seen, and this again, my personal opinion, so don't cancel culture John over at Catholic Spirit Radio, but to me over the last couple months, my feeling is that what we've seen is that it's the breakdown that we've had in the family unit that has really gotten us kind of as a society to where we're at these days. And I think it's shocking to me that this wouldn't have been that big of a deal if to your point, if all the moms were still at home taking care of the kids, the school being out wouldn't have, as been a big of a transition or, those types of things. So I think it's, I think we've put ourselves in a really bad position as a society where we expect both parents to have to be able to work really just to make ends meet. I mean, for most families, it's not that, necessarily mom wants to work. It's that if they want to pay the bills, both parents are, we've gotten ourselves into a position where, we have to have two income households, and I don't think that that's. I know a lot of Catholic families from my time at the Knights of Columbus, working with Catholic families on life insurance and that kind of stuff. I knew a lot of Catholic families that, I guess, to say they had their priorities straight, and so mom was able to stay at home and dad worked, and they they might not have had all the stuff that a two-income household has, but they probably had as much, if not maybe even more, money in the bank and more safety and security, and mom was able to be at home with the kids. And, I think a lot of it just comes down to, our priorities and what we think, what our assumptions are of what, the world is supposed to be.
Yeah, I don't know. For myself, I don't know. I obviously have kind of an attraction. I'm not sure if it's a biblical thing or whatever. I know mothers, the ones that bear children, it seems more natural to me that they are the ones that stay home. But I also know they're not doing too bad in the workplace,
Yeah. And yeah, this isn't a knock against moms.
Yeah.
At any stretch. I think, so to your point, I've been staying at home more. My wife did a fantastic job. She does a fantastic job. I think that we have, as a society, we have decided that we have degraded the value of motherhood and raising children to the point where, that's not a career.
Well, that's a good point.
And so, I think we don't have conversations with our daughters and our, as they become young women to it's a vocation.
Yeah.
Fatherhood is a vocation. Motherhood is a vocation. Our primary purpose in life is to fulfill our vocation. It's not necessarily to go to work 40 hours a week. And that's usually part of it.
Yeah.
But I think I, and again, from personal experience, I know, as we had more kids, my wife worked less and less and less. And, our kids reacted always in a positive manner. The more she was at home, the more security they felt. They knew who was picking them up after school every day. They, there was that routine. It was, and I think that, and again, this is not a, This is in no way a knock to moms who work. That's that's not the conversation. I from personal experience, this is what worked well for our family. Right. And, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, we get financially into situations where the only alternative is, you know, to work our way out of them.
Right.
You know, and this goes back to some conversations I know we've had previously on the radio or that I have had. I don't think you were here for them, but you know, I think we've done a great job of overemphasizing college for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that if your daughter has a vocation to motherhood, well, then what, you know, why is she spending $100,000 in student loan debt potentially to get a degree if what she wants to do is raise children? Or, you know, I'm just saying there's a lot of...
Yeah, if that's...
But we do the same thing to boys, too. I mean...
Yeah.
I remember in high school, I had a buddy that wanted to be a diesel mechanic, and his dad refused and made him go to, you know, and the kid struggled
right
in school, and he went and he got a 4-year degree and he had college loan debt, and when he got out,
yeah,
he went to diesel mechanic school, yeah, and he's a great diesel mechanic,
right?
And it, you know, I think we've saddled a lot of kids with a burden that, you know, it just might not fit their life, but we try to have this cookie cutter approach to, well, yeah, if you don't go to college, you're not worth as much, or
yeah. Yeah. I got to ask my daughter about my daughter Sarah, if she would give me a little reflection about I don't know if this is a good time to bring it up. But it touches on some of the things we're talking about now, but it kind of talks a little bit about her perception of the of some of the things that what dads are dealing with, some of the things they do well, some of the maybe the challenges that it is being a dad today.
Yeah.
From her perspective, as she lives and works in Vancouver. Her mom and I were separated and eventually divorced many years ago.
Yeah.
When she was just 5 years old. Now, from her growing up years, so I'm just speaking in her perspective, how she has a father, me, and she's got a life lens through which she would see that father, and then give some of her views on dadhood, if you will, today. For her growing up years, I saw her like for suppers and sleepovers and Sundays, but primary custody was her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her if she'd provide some general comments, and here's what she said. She said, sure, you know, I'm willing. She said, my only caveat would be, I've only got one dad, so it feels a bit tricky to generalize, but she knows lots of dads in her life,
sure,
you know, lots of her friends and people of all ages, grandfathers and everything. And she said, I'd have to say that dads, what they could probably work on is trying to really understand and be open to the fact that being a dad is different than being a mom.
Yeah.
So... being the one who gives birth, and that they can be and need to be parents in different but ultimately equitable ways.
Sure.
So, you know, it's got to be a fair deal. And she said, I've thought about it, and apparently she's talked about it a lot with her mom friends who have progressive, loving, millennial, feminist husbands, but still the moms, and this surprised them a little, they felt they needed to do a lot of navigating and communicating to land in an equitable parenting relationship. She said it's been really shocking and hard for a lot of the moms that she knew. They didn't know they'd be dealing with this kind of a negotiation. She said their husbands mostly know parenting like from their dads. And so it's like their knowledge is a generation old. But she said, Sarah's saying, we, society, women, expect them to be caught up to today's standards. And she said, I think that's really hard. And she said, while it gets figured out, inevitably mums pick up the slack. If there's something missing between what people expect and what's equitable, mums sort of notice it. And dads, maybe because they don't think they're expected to, they don't. You know, the mums have no time to ease in to being parents. So they can't really negotiate the fact that the child has a need. So she said, I think we have inherently low expectations of dads in a lot of ways that we need to update. And she said it made her think of two examples. She said she knows this female artist who said something like, I just wish I could do something in my work that would get as much respect and praise as a man holding his own baby in a cafe. So if a guy, now maybe you do a lot of holding your own babies.
I do like holding babies.
Well, there you go. Yeah, there you go. But she said, like, I guess she was picturing a man alone in a cafe with a baby. All of a sudden, oh, wow, what a caring, nurturing guy.
Yeah.
Whereas a mom alone with the baby, when's it going to start crying? You know, yeah.
It reminds me of the Friends episode when Joey and Chandler borrowed Ross's kid
exactly,
to go to the park to pick up women. Because you're right. I mean, the women would see these two guys with this baby, and they think, oh, man, what a great guy.
And she said a riff off of that is one time she was going out with a friend of hers. It's actually maybe her best friend, but I don't want to put words in her mouth, but it's a very good friend of hers. And her husband was going to take care of their two small kids while Sarah and her friend went out to dinner. The mom went out to dinner. So Sarah, she said, I thanked him because she appreciated getting to go out with her friend. I thanked him for babysitting. And he said he rightly corrected me by saying, I'm not babysitting. Yes. You know, I'm their dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's when I knew I had, as, you know, she's a young woman, but I had internalized these same expectations of dads. And it surprised that self-realization surprised her. So anyway, so this is, so she said, you know, she noticed how dads were actually expecting more of themselves, but sometimes the women of today, they have to update their expectations too.
Yeah.
And so it's anyway, she said she looked forward, Sarah looks forward to hearing our conversation.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And she closed by saying most of the dads in her life are parents of small children and babies, because the age thing that she's
sure.
in. So she has less of a sense of how the fatherhood plays out into equitable parenting beyond childhood, into adolescence and adulthood. So I think you're moving into that area with your kids.
Yeah, it can be a challenge.
Yeah.
It's a, well, excuse me, and both of, well, our two that are older are girls. So it's, you know, it's very interesting. I think that, to go back to one of the biggest issues that I think that we have as a society, it's hard getting that out this morning, is that we don't have dads present in a lot of households.
Mm.
And I think that that is, of all things, I wouldn't say bad, but let's say you're a decent mom or a really good mom, or you're a decent dad or a really good dad, I think the most important thing is two parents trying really hard.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head right there.
And to your point, doing it in an equitable way and doing it in a loving relationship and all those types of things, I think the absolute worst thing that we've done to our society is we have made one parent households acceptable and glorified them a lot of times. And I think that that's the biggest issue that kids have today is a lack of a father in the household. Even if he's just a decent dad, you know, even if he's just mediocre at best.
Yeah.
But, you know, in order to look at the best scenario, I think you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, I don't know if it's the stereotypical dad, you know, from generations past, you know, his dad was, you know, up reading the newspaper, went to work, came home, ate dinner, had a beer, listened to the radio, or maybe watched TV, depending, and then, you know, went to bed and hit repeat.
Yeah.
And I don't think I think as dads we can do way better and absolutely should. And I think that some benefits that have come, you know, through our kind of updated lens of fathers, you know, is that we're expected to be there emotionally for our kids and most importantly for our spouses, but for our children as well. You know, we're expected to be at the ball games and all those types of things.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I think those things are all very important. I do think where we have somewhat overstepped is that and maybe this didn't come out, you know, in our first few minutes of the conversation, there are things that women are inherently better at than men, and we should glorify women who do those things, and, you know, and so, I mean, again, I didn't want it to sound as like it was a knock at the beginning. I believe that women are way better qualified than men are at most things. I mean... To your point about your daughter and men not seeing it, I think most of the time it's because we're just oblivious to most things that kind of happen in the world around us. You know, I've heard people talk about that. You know, the mom is the head of the domestic church in the household, and the dad is more the head of the kind of the international church, yeah. you know, in relationship to the other families on the block or,
yeah.
you know, the other families at church or at school. Yeah. You know, it's through our dads that we learn how to deal with the world outside of our house. And a lot of times it's our mom that teaches us compassion and caring and those yeah. types of things that, you know, are, you know, very important inside the house. I think, to your point, I think the most important thing that we can do as fathers is to love and support our wives. I think that.
Well, that's a good
point. The children, I think, will learn more about relationships and stability and all those types of things if their fathers are present and loving and emotionally supportive to their wife. Like, I tell my kids all the time, like, you know, you can be happy, unhappy, sad, mad. I don't really care. This is my wife. And my allegiance is to her first and foremost.
That's
you're our yeah. child.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times that gets lost. You know, I think a lot of times parents become divided.
Yeah.
Because this parent parents this way, this parent parents that way. We had a short conversation before we started. Kids are very good at manipulating situations yeah. sometimes. They're yeah. very good at, you know, dividing and conquering, and they're very yeah. persistent at times. I think a unified front as parents, you know, so as a father, I think the most important thing we can do is to love our wives like Christ loved the church, to be willing to sacrifice for her and there as an extension, willing to sacrifice for the family.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that sacrifice is just suffering and sacrifice. I've said multiple times, I think, is one of the truest things that the Catholic Church brings to the Christian table that I think our Protestant brothers and sisters miss out on, is the beauty of sacrifice and suffering. And, you know, if you're doing life and you're not suffering, you're probably missing. You're probably not there for other people in a way yeah. that you should be.
Yeah.
So yeah.
you remind me of something that my mom said to me once. Actually, I said it to her first. So I'm young, and Dad worked late nights those days. He was a social worker and saw a lot of people at night, and so we were around her. Like, we had five kids in those. I'm thinking of we had eventually six kids with my sister, but I was older by then.
So yeah.
I don't think I would have asked this kind of question earlier. But at this point, maybe I was 8 or 9 or something like that. I was at home, and Mom might have been making. I was the oldest, so I'd be up a little bit later. So she might have been making chocolate chip cookies or something. And I said, "Oh, Mom, you would probably love me the best of all the kids." And she said, "Well, I love you all equally." And I said, "Well, about Dad, you know, he's not around very much. You love us better, don't you?" She said, "No, no, I love him first.
Yeah,
you guys come from that, but buddy, you guys are next.
Yeah,
he's the first." What? You love him more than us? We're around all the time. You know, he's always working and things. No, you have to, Paul, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was thinking, gee, she doesn't love me as much as I thought she did. And I was quite actually offended by
yeah.
that. But later on, it became a real source of solidity to me. I realized, you know, it was, first of all, she was telling me a truth, like an adult truth, which, you know, adults don't always tell kids, "Oh yeah, I love
yeah,
you." Yeah,
yeah.
She was telling me a truth from her own life, and she was telling me where I fit, which was a good place. I wanted to be number one.
Yeah.
But I kind of, over time, as I reflected on that, I realized I didn't have to be number one, and it wasn't healthy for me to think of that. It was kind of childish, you know. And it gave me more mature view of things, and also gave me this idea: yeah, they're rock solid.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe Dad does work late, and maybe sometimes when all the kids are needing diapers and this and that kind of things, you know, it might seem like they're busy and you know, I sometimes wonder, well, you know, Dad does this, Mom does this, where are they coming together? Well, of course there were six kids, so they were coming together. but you know, they were together in a sense in us and through us, but first their commitment came to each other, and then we came from that.
Yeah.
And she loved us, but we were definitely from the love of the marriage.
You know, I think it's interesting because, you know, the domestic church is a reflection of the Blessed Trinity. And I think that's a great explanation of the Trinity, you know, that God and Christ love each other so much that from them, from from that love comes forth the Holy Spirit.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, that's a great, you know, physical reflection of that is that, you know, your mom and your dad were so committed to each other and loved each other that, you know, from that love came you guys. And but that doesn't then trump the relationship that God and Christ have with each other, you know?
No, that's a good point, Jason. Yeah. Yeah. And she was a mom most of the time. She'd tell a kid, you know, she was extremely loving, and she'd tell a kid what the kid wanted to hear to reassure them.
Yeah.
But she wouldn't go that far. And so I remember that.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if I wonder if people just don't work as hard today as they used to. I mean, it seemed like, to your point, like your mom, you know, your dad worked all the time in order to provide. Your mom worked all the time in order to care for the home.
And she worked part-time, too, as a nurse.
Okay.
So she'd work a 3 to 11 shift and come home exhausted and up the next morning with the kids,
And, it, you know, and, you know, I from personal experience or from, you know, friends and everything, it's like, All I seem to hear from young parents these days is, "Oh, I'm just so tired."
Yeah,
you know, it's like, "Oh, I had to, you know, I had to work from 8 to 4 today."
And
I got home and then had to make dinner. Now I'm just exhausted. I think we've just decided that, you know, we've become so accustomed to filling our time with things that don't matter, television, social media, and that it takes so much of our time that we don't realize that it's even gone, that our time is gone. You know, that then we go, "Oh man, I just watched TV for 3 hours and I didn't get all this stuff done."
Right.
You know?
Right.
And
now I'm exhausted.
And now I'm mentally exhausted because it wore me out, you know, sitting here watching TV.
Yeah.
And, you know, I there's a lot of technological advances that I think we'd do better without sometimes.
Yeah, well, it certainly does make you wonder the amount of times, like, I don't consider myself a big phone person, but I think if I counted the number of times in a day that I checked the phone to see, you know, I've got a couple little stocks and I wish I didn't have them, but, you know, a couple little stocks and they go up and down and in and out and these days are going crazy. And it's such a little kind of distraction or addiction to kind of, okay, what's that stock doing? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And sometimes I'll check it.
There's a thing on your, you have an iPhone.
It's like gambling.
Yeah. There's a screen time thing on there.
Yeah.
And you can go in and it'll tell you every app that you have and how much time that day or that week you spent on that app. And it's amazing, I think, to...
The total amount of time would be interesting to me. Also, the number of what I would call thought or spirit or peace interruptions. So just the number, even if it's only for 10 seconds, it might not take me very long to check up, see what that stock is today. And like I say, I don't have a huge, the word portfolio is even kind of too grand for what we have. Just have a couple of things that we picked up along the way when we were in between all different retirement planning things, and we just grabbed a couple. But anyway, the number of times, I'll bet I look at that phone a couple hundred times a week.
Yeah.
And if you think of those as thought interruptions, how many times a week, if I didn't have that thought interruption, how many times would I legitimately have to check on that stock? Once a month? Once a, you know, or how much, if I didn't have this, if I had to call somewhere, or if I had to look in the paper, or how many of those interruptions in my piece would lead to somewhere better than the phone leads them?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you really only need to know the price when you sell it.
Well, so. That's true. You know what? You're right.
So to your point, like you don't ever need to look at it again until you go to sell it.
That's a good point. Yeah. And thinking of yourself that you've made money or lost money, as you say.
What difference does it make?
The pro investors, and I think, you know, you're more familiar with that than I am, they know that the money doesn't exist until it's sold.
Yeah.
Until then, it's all speculative. But over and above just the stocks, I mean, other things too. Of course, when you go in for one purpose, you notice something else.
Yeah.
And the phone feeds you something like you mentioned friends before. What do you say? They might have a little item up there, what Joey was really like, or, you know, or something like that. And then you click on, what was he really like? You know, and they know, of course, we're watching the Andy Griffith Show on Netflix now, but from the 1960s, you're too young to remember that. But we're watching the season 4, season 5.
Anyway, too young to remember. I mean, I know who you're talking about.
You know who I'm talking about. But anyway, it was a cultural phenomenon at the time. But anyway, I'm watching that because it's going to go off Netflix at the end of the month. We're watching a couple of those every night. And, you know, there's no phones. A lot of young people, when they look at old movies and old TV shows, they say, where's the phones? Somebody's out, for instance, they drive somewhere, and they want to correspond with their person at home.
Then they got to go back home.
Or find a phone booth.
Yeah.
What? Why do they have to find a phone booth? And it strikes people today as so strange.
Yeah.
So
I've seriously considered over the last few months just getting rid of my phone.
Wow.
Or maybe just going to like an old flip phone that just like...
Some people do
that. If you want to call me, you can call me, I guess.
Some people do that, and they say that that covers the emergencies. But I guess, yeah, so it's a slightly different... I guess we're getting off the old father... I've pulled you off
the fatherhood thing
a little bit.
But. I think it, as a father, you know, we have to be mindful of those things that pull us away from being present.
Right.
So back to my statement earlier, I think... You know, we have to be present, even not even as fathers, just as individuals. We need to be present with people. And I think the phone is a huge obstacle to being truly present with anyone.
So if your kid's being bratty and it's more of a, if it's more fun for you or more of a distraction for you to look at something on your phone, say, just a minute.
Yeah.
I guess that's, you know, you don't want to pay attention to the kid because they're being bratty and you don't know what to do about it because other than to tell them not to do it again or whatever. It can be a distraction from anything, I guess, you don't want to deal with.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we find Christ in doing the little things perfect every day.
Mm.
And, you know, whether that's being present or loving or disciplining or, you know, whatever we can do, whatever interactions that we have or that we should have that we might not even have because we're not present.
Yeah.
You know, I think we find Christ in doing those as perfect as we have the ability to do them. So if that's... You know, for a mom, if that's, you know, taking the extra time to smile at the baby while she changes the diaper, or, you know, for dad, if that's, you know, being present to cut the kid's hot dog up into little pieces and having a short conversation with him, you know, while he does it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think those are the things that make really great parents is.
Yeah.
So one thing that, you know, has... that I've kind of, I don't know, struggled with, or if maybe, you know, to your point, my kids are a little bit young and now they're starting to get to the point. It's like, you know, I hear people like, oh, you know, my dad shared all this wisdom with me.
Mm.
Like, I don't feel like I ever have the occasion to share wisdom. Like, when does that start to happen? Like, you know, when is it that my kid, you know, to your point, like asking your mom and, you know, about it, really about a truth of life.
Yeah.
And about relationships and marriage. You know, to me as a dad, that's, you know, the important things of, you know, when, being there present, again, to convey those messages, but then also being equipped to convey those messages in a way that they stick with those kids, hopefully throughout their whole life.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do think, to tell you the truth, just from whatever vantage of experience that I have, and I have one child as opposed to your five,
wow.
So you're going to have five times the examples here pretty darn soon, and you've already probably got a lot more than I do. But in her particular case, both for positive and negative, there's things that she remembers that I didn't think she remembered.
Yeah.
And, you know, it might be a negative thing where I didn't support her, I didn't protect her one time, and she still remembers that.
Yeah.
And I sort of remember it, but I do definitely remember it now, but... And there might be another time when she noticed something that I did that she now does. But I didn't really say a word other than said, oh, I got to do this and I got to take care of this. Sarah, remember, we have to do this. Every time I do this, I have to do this for this person. And I might not even have thought about it. But she remembered that kind of thing was done. Maybe it's getting a little stuff for the poor box when you go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
That kind of thing she remembered. Maybe it's the way you deal with somebody, and I know you might have different views on this, but we had a lot of them where we came from, panhandlers and things like that. In the city that we lived in, there was a lot of people that were asking for money. And I know people have different views about give them money and they're just going to drink it and all that kind of thing. But my view was usually more the weak. Okay,
less cynical.
Well, buddy, you know, you want a quarter. And if you do want to have a cigarette or a beer, I mean, I have a cigarette and a beer once in a while. Anyway, here's your buck. Anyway, so I'd be more likely to do that. And she remembers those things. I didn't say anything, but she just watched.
Yeah.
So I'd say your kids are picking up an awful lot of messages. From the good and the bad, whatever the bad. I'm sure there's not much bad, Jason, in your case.
Oh,
but,
no.
But whatever, you know, they're picking up a lot of wisdom, quote unquote, from that.
So let me ask you this. What are your thoughts on your father? You said that he was kind of more that old school, or, you know, maybe more traditional, you know, he worked all the time and he provided for the family, but he wasn't as around as much. What are your thoughts?
Well, he was until a certain point in his life. And then there was a car accident, a big tragedy in our family. And my father's was badly hurt, nearly killed. His father was killed in that crash.
Oh, wow.
And so it was a big family thing, and my dad's life was, the whole trajectory was changed. He couldn't walk for a couple of years, and so everything changed, and then he was home all the time. And then after about a year and a half, he got laid off at his job because he wasn't as energetic as he used to be, and he wasn't as good at raising money for the social work agency, and then he was trying to climb back into the workplace and all this. So it was two different perspectives. One, he was gone all the time, and then he was home all the time. And between the two of them, I mean, I didn't always show my dad as much respect as I should have. And for instance, when he was home all the time, I kind of wondered, why isn't he getting a job? Why isn't it easier to do that? I didn't understand some of the stresses he was under, that there was kind of maybe like a bit of a depression after his own father had died in the car crash when he was driving and things like that.
Yeah.
And his own physical his body had been shattered, lungs punctured. A guy basically gave mouth to mouth resuscitation on site, a US Marine, this is up in Canada, who happened to come upon the car, gave him he physically and mentally was kind of shattered. And so he had a lot to come back from, and I sometimes didn't have a lot of patience with that, you know. But he could be strict and a little impatient, you know. But I am too. I'm kind of strict to kind of certain guidelines. I'm kind of rigid.
Yeah. I think to our conversation earlier, that tends to be a male trait.
Yeah, a little. But one thing I was thinking when I drove up here today, in terms of his relationship to the Lord, I know keep remembering the Catholic show, we get in such interesting conversations. Sometimes I forget about our context, our Catholic context. But there was one thing. Dad could be quite cynical about worldly powerful people, about even the Pope. He might even think, for instance, oh, the Pope, why'd the Pope do that? Or why'd the Pope do this?
Yeah, he'd fit in well today.
Well, it's one thing.
He'd be on Twitter all the time today.
Well, he wouldn't have wanted to go public with it. That's one thing. But but one thing, and it was the same thing with Mom, is one thing I noticed, it was a thread that ran through them. He was very humble when it came to the Lord. He didn't talk a lot about the Lord, but I'm writing this song, you know, I'm a songwriter too, and I'm writing this song now, and I said, my mom was a believer, you know, she bowed her head and prayed, and my dad, he knew what his God could do. He believed in his own private way, and he definitely did. It was he was kind of arrogant, and not arrogant, but cynical about a lot of the ways in the world. But when it came to the Lord, he was sort of a holy awe about him. And it was good to see that in a parent who most of the time you think of as kind of an authority figure. But when it came to the Lord, he was the child. And he was a willing child. And he was a respectful child. Not a fearful, the Lord's going to get me kind of thing, but just like he was in the presence of someone when he was in church or whatever, that he really respected, deeply respected and loved, but was waiting to see what the Lord had to say. Was not like Dad, like me, could talk a lot, but when it came to the Lord, he was very quiet. I don't know a lot about his personal relationship with the Lord, but I remember in his later years once.
Your parents were Catholic?
Definitely.
Definitely. Okay.
Cradle Catholics. And that was part of their reticence. In those days, in the 50s, when they grew up, Catholicism was culturally popular. Bishop Sheen was on TV. I think at one point he was one of the highest rated shows on TV against people like Milton Berle and that. I mean, he was competing with those, his half hour show. This was Bing Crosby was putting out movies about Catholics. This was the context in which Catholicism had reached its popular zenith. It was quite acceptable and glamorous almost to be a Catholic. So how far we've come since then, eh? But anyway, he was in that era where you didn't necessarily have to brag about being a Catholic because everybody knew it and everybody sort of accepted it. So it was kind of, to him, he didn't think it was good to talk about it. It was kind of like bragging. So he was quiet about it, and he and Mom didn't understand in later years why my brother and I tended to get a little more active about things. We said, well, we have to tell people because not everybody knows that you're Catholic these days. It's different. Anyway, but he was very quiet about his faith. But I remember at one point when he was in the old folks' home, his mom was passed away. I kind of sensed something he'd said once, oh, yeah, I haven't been to confession for a while or whatever. And he wouldn't even go. They had little church services in the common room of the old folks' home. Well, he didn't like gatherings. He liked going to church. He liked the formal church.
Yeah.
But he didn't like the little communion services, less formal, kind of maybe, I think he felt both superior and inferior, if you get my drift. He didn't like the kind of, oh, you nice older folks here, we're all here to be nice to you. Anything like that, I could just see him frowning. It's just the thought of it. Well, just leave me alone in my room. You know, yeah. I'll be fine. I'll watch the Pope on TV. Well, he liked the Pope when he was doing the masses and everything. He just had this thing where he thought John Paul should retire because he looked really, really sick, you know. But anyway, that was a separate thing. But anyway, at one point he kind of evidenced this, and he was a very, you know, he was humble and in other ways he didn't want to get exposed. He wanted to be sort of reticent. But I kind of got the sense he wanted a confession, and I said, Dad, would you like me to try to arrange a priest to come in here and see you? He said, well, that wouldn't be too bad. That wouldn't be too bad. So, you know, it took a little doing because when I called the diocese, they said, well, there's a guy who comes in there occasionally to the common room and he does a mass, and all your father would have to do is ask him. I said, well, he doesn't want to go down to the common room. And, you know, their attitude could have been, well, if he doesn't want to go, what can we do? I mean, is he mobile? Yeah, he's more or less mobile with his walker. But he doesn't like that group setting. And so anyway, finally they were, you know, it wasn't that hard, but yeah. They agreed, and a priest did go out to see him, and I know that meant a lot to him.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying is that in some ways he was a proud man, but he knew what his God could do, and he knew who his God was, and he knew who was God, and he knew it wasn't him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that those are all really good points that, again, I think if you look at our today's culture at large, those are all questions and answers that would be lost on the vast majority of people these days. You know, I mean, I think that, I mean, how often do you hear the, well, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious, you know, type of like, well, that, I mean, to me, that sounds like that's all about you. That's the way you feel about something. And, you know, there's not a lot of humility there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that, you know, you know, I think you bring up a good point too about, you know, him being proud. You know, I think one of the issues that dads struggle with these days is kind of trying to figure out what that role is that they're supposed to play. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, you know, our you know, gender roles used to be very clearly defined. Mm-hmm. And I think today, obviously, they're all over the map. I mean, you have a large portion of the population that argues that gender doesn't even exist, you know, except as a social construct. And so I think it is difficult for young men and dads to try to figure that out. I mean, I think most dads want to step up from where maybe their dads were on the emotional level and those types of things. I think to your point that's not always met with open arms from moms or from, you know, the feminist side of things a lot of times. You know, I think that sometimes I think we've created for ourselves a struggle between men and women where instead of being complimentary, that we take a lot of things, you know, to the offense, or we see that by uplifting, you know, women, that means that we have to lower the status of men or vice versa.
You know,
that I think that we, you know, and that's why I go back to, I think the most important thing for fathers is to be there for their wives and to support them and, you know,
I agree with you. I'd say that's probably the single most important thing, but the only tiny caveat I would have to that is it wouldn't be just, I really support you, I love you, they're your kids. You know,
well, yeah.
You don't want to have that attitude. It wasn't like, you take care of them, because I really support you, though. Whatever you decide, hey, it's okay with me. Because, you know, she's going to want to say, well, yeah, that doesn't help when it comes to the diaper pail. I mean, who's dealing, who's helping out here?
Yeah.
So, and it's not like I got into the thing. I'm sure you've got into it, too, and my daughter Sarah mentioned it in regard to her thing. Even I'll run into it now. We've got no kids around the house. I mean, my wife now is not Sarah's mother, but her stepmom, whatever. But it's similar to, it's not really a fatherhood thing, but it's more of a husband-wife thing. You know, I'm helping out my wife when I do something around the house. And I know that's not the right attitude.
Yeah.
I'm helping our house. I'm being part, when she does something, she's doing, you know, she's doing the floor. When I do the floor, I'm helping her.
Yeah.
And I think the context in where we are now, there's only two of us.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't, and I'm retired, why shouldn't those things be the same as me? But she still, this morning, before I was coming to come here, she was dusting. I don't ever think of dusting.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I would never dust.
Think of what
I might get that DeWalt leaf blower out and just dust that way. But well, anyway, keep going.
I think what maybe people are saying is, you know, do a little work, guys and dads. Do a little work and try to think the same way as you would if you were in a business sense. Try to think of the things you're not thinking of.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, that's really all. Do we have any response? Oh, I never thought of doing that. Oh, thanks so much for doing that, honey. Yeah, well, she didn't say, well, maybe you should have, could you just work a little harder to maybe think of some of those things to maybe help me out, since especially only there's two of us here now. And since my wife actually does more of the grass cutting now than me, because I can't handle the noise of the big mower, and she can handle it better. So, you know, she's doing the man job. I should be stepping up with the quote unquote the other stuff, right? So,
yeah, I mean, I think that, you know what I think it goes back to? I don't know that it's necessarily the wrong, you know, I'm doing the floor to help my wife. I don't know that that's necessarily off the mark. And that I think a slight tweak is, you know, what we are called to serve one another. And
that's
so
true.
I think with a slight tweak is, you know, I'm doing this in service to my wife, whether it's her job, air quotes, job or not, doesn't matter. You know, this is important to her. And I can do it to help her.
Well, that's a good point.
And so I don't. So I would just say that, you know, I don't know that you're off the mark. I think it's just a slight tweak. Well, we're called to serve one another. And so
it doesn't really matter.
I mean, she's doing the floor in service to you.
Well, that's true.
So
yeah, although yeah,
but we're called to do it together. So I'm not. I'm not saying that.
You know, I agree with you there. That's an interesting way of looking about it. And and like I get, you know, maybe I get a little. Well, let's say I'm doing something and I could, what was I doing the other day? Some little thing. And I was thinking, she might be going out or something. And she says, okay, could you do this on the laundry or whatever? And, I might do exactly what she asks.
Yeah, but not anything more.
And then think, okay, I've done, I've put the laundry in again. Now the fact that, you know, this is a little bit of an exaggeration. The fact that it wasn't actually dry when it stopped. That's not my fault. You just told me to push them. You know, I should actually be, and I did. I'm not that.
Yeah.
I'm not that dense.
But see, I think what goes back to just being a man. Like, I need a list of things to do.
Well, yes.
When the list is done, I didn't see on my own anything else that needed. I mean, I really like. I think we, by and large, we just miss stuff.
So being male is it condones being oblivious to the world. I'm challenging you here, Jason.
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure that I think most women would agree too. Like, you know, like if you want me to do this, then I just need you to tell me to do that. I mean, I think this goes back to the differences between men and women, which I think we do ourselves a bigger injustice trying to claim that they don't exist. Men and women are different from each other. By and large, we act differently. There's things about us that are different. And I tell my wife all the time, if you want me to do stuff, I'm more than happy to do it. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I just need a list.
I guess that's understandable. But you know, we were talking before the show went on about how sometimes you, with your kids now, it gets almost tiring trying to get them to do things.
Yeah.
Because you just do it yourself.
Right.
And I think sometimes the partner in the relationship, let's say in this case the mother, the wife that we're talking about, might say, "Oh, geez, rather than it takes me time to do a list, buddy. I mean, I've got to get out the door in 10 minutes. I'll do the darn thing.
Right.
I'll do the rest of it when I get back. And then, you know, the lazy male thing, and I've probably been there a time or two in my life, a time or three would be, okay, bye.
Yeah. I mean, the conversation that we were having before, it was about me staying at home with the kids over the last few months. And the point that I made was that, you know, I think my wife, when she's at home with the kids, she sees all the stuff that needs to be done, and it's easier for her to just do it than it is for her to try to get the kids to do it. Where I look at it like, all right, there's six of us here.
Yeah.
You're 6 years older. You're old enough to do these things, and I make a list. And I'm like, this is what you need to do today. And, you know, you're 9 years old, so you can handle a little bit more. And then the 14-year-old, for the most part, I just kind of put her in charge of managing the younger ones.
Oh, boy.
I'm big on delegating responsibility.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, I think that's maybe the difference between men and women. Like, we look at a project and we say, here's all the steps that need to be taken in order to get it done. Here's all the people that are eligible to do the work. We're going to delegate it out. At the end of the day, I'm just assuming at the end of the day, those things are done because I said they needed to be done. Where my wife looks at that and she goes, yep, it's just easier to do it.
You know what? I think this kind of comes back. I mean, I know there are inherent differences between men and women. I don't know if I'm not as clear, I guess, as to where they come down in the divide between equitable distribution of work. I'm not quite as clear in terms of the housework. And I don't know if God says, thou shalt sweep, you know, to women, and thou shalt put out the garbage to men. Although that tends to be a division right there, you know, that is often done. The one requires maybe sometimes.
I typically do the garbage.
Yeah. And with us, I do too. Although my wife.
I've assigned that to the 6-year-old though now.
Well, there you go. Yeah,
that happens. He takes out the garbage.
That happens too. But I think coming back to your thing, you said the primary job of being a father, strangely enough, is to support the mother, or use the husband, the wife, but the father, the mother too, in a strange way. Being a father means supporting the mother. Being the mother, I guess, means supporting the father, I guess. So if a conscientious father senses somehow that a mother, if she's really paying attention to her, he's going to notice when she might be getting a little overloaded.
Yeah.
And saying, how can I
help?
How can I help?
Yeah.
And it might be doing this thing, it might be doing another thing, it might be doing something that isn't that difficult even. Just take the kids out of the house for an hour or something like that. Well, maybe that's difficult, but, you know, just give me a little time or whatever. And whatever it is, if for him, for his extrasensory perception, whether or not he thinks, oh, well, I'm going to start being sensitive to dust mites.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, he can be sensitive to when his wife is a little tired.
Yeah.
And or a little upset about this or seems to be rushing around and getting a little stressed because why is she stressed? Because she's got 6 or 7 things that on her mind to do. So without being a martyr himself, I mean, if he thinks he's got a whole bunch of things that, like that you said, that you, the chicken coop, and you sort of consider that your territory, the chicken coop, right?
Yeah.
You don't expect her to come out and help with the chicken coop too much.
Well, she loves those chickens. So.
Well, there you go. And she'll probably...
Yeah, she'll be out there all the time.
Do a lot of work. Yeah. But
the chicken coop is actually letting the chickens in and out and feeding and watering. That's the 5-year-old's job.
Ah.
And he feeds and waters the dog.
I think before too long, you and your wife are just going to have your feet up here. And
yeah.
The kids are going to be...
I don't know. I said it's their job. I didn't say it's done all the time or correctly.
But, you know, really, though, back to the... It sounds simplistic, but back to that thing where if you're really supporting and loving your wife, and not just supporting her to run the household, but supporting her in love somehow... And we are moving toward a thing where if you know, obviously, if somebody's working outside the household more... They don't have to do as much at home. You got to do some of that, right? And so they can't be doing both. And that tends to be the old bargain. That still happens a lot.
Yeah.
You know, the wife gets home from the job and then starts doing a little housework. And you know, you're not trying to be lazier, but you just didn't know it had to be done.
Yeah.
So as you say, the list. So maybe it should be more organized doing the list. I'm devising a new all these rules for things that I, you know, that probably don't apply.
That's because as men, we prefer rules. We just this is black and white. This is I think to your point that has been a struggle. This is my assumption because I'm a man and I identify that way. Is that it used to be that women took care of the house and men went to work. And now men and women both go to work and women still take care of the house.
Mm.
which obviously isn't fair.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think from my perspective and our experience, for our family, it's better for me to go to work and for her to take care of the house.
Yeah.
And I think and I think that that's the ideal situation for most families. Now, or should, I'm saying yeah. that I think that should be the ideal situation for most families.
I think
that's a hill I'll die on.
I think the only hill I will die on that somebody I think it's definitely better that either the dad or the mom stay home with the kids than daycare. And we utilized daycare a lot when my daughter was young, and I don't think that's it as good as either the dad or the mom. Even the dad, I think, is better than daycare.
I agree. I think the dad is better than daycare, but I think that women are innately more capable and better at caring for the household. And by household, I mean children, not mopping and laundry.
Yeah.
You know, they're better at caring for the domestic church, which is the core of the family. And so that's where I would say, in my perception of that, I'm actually, I think, elevating the status of women to say that's something that men can't do. Mm. Not that we can't, but that we're not equipped
to do as well
naturally to do as well as women. And again, this I think that, you know, as a society, we've tried to say, well, if women stay at home, they're just less. And really, I think the traditional Christian and definitely the traditional Catholic view is, no, what we're saying is that women are better equipped than men.
Yeah.
You know, Mary was better equipped than Joseph to stay at home and raise Jesus.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think as a society, we've tried to say, well, that just means you think less of women. No, it doesn't. I think that women are better at that and they excel at that because I think that that's their, for most women, that's their natural vocation. And so, you know, I think that, you know, I think that's where we've missed the boat with our young daughters is that, you know, we put them into a position where we say, well, you know, honey, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I think most, you know, 6 to 10 year old girls say, I want to be a mom. And then by the time they're 16 to 20, we've beaten that out of them. And we say, no, honey, you don't want to just be a mom. You don't want to just be a mom. There's no greater job in the world this is coming from a dad's perspective than being a mom. I mean, she has relationships with those kids that I won't ever, they're different, but that I wouldn't ever be able to have, you know? I mean, when my son falls off his bike and he skins his knee and he doesn't come to dad because he knows dad will just say, well, walk it off. Go get back on your bike.
Why are you crying? Very sensitive of you,
you know? The other day, my 6-year-old son is out at the pool crying because there's a wasp. And you know what my response to him was? Dude, there's like 3 girls from the neighborhood here. Stop crying like a baby. Oh. You know?
Yeah.
And my wife's like, oh, you know,
yeah.
I'll try and get rid of the wasp.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, and this goes back to, we need fathers and mothers both in the household. Because children need both of those perspectives.
No argument with you there, Daddy.
So I think if we want to fix the culture that we're in, we got to get dads to stick it out.
And support their moms.
And support their moms and support their kids.
Yeah.
So happy Father's Day.
God bless.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Jason.
It's been a fantastic conversation with Sir Paul Moore.
Hey, thank you for the elevation.
All the way from
Peoria. Well, by way of Canada.
You've been listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
You've been listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance. Download our podcasts at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.